morning, Santa Fe, and welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting live from the Santa Fe Baking Company on Cordova Road and streaming on the web at ksfr.org. Today, we're going to be listening to Chris Hedges. We're going to be interviewing Chris Hedges, author of a new book, American Fascists, The Christian Right and the War on America. But first, we want to encourage you, if you are one of those holdouts who hasn't called 428-1393 to make your contribution to KSFR, this is the day. That particular day has arrived when you have decided to make that step to call and make a contribution to public radio. I'd like to welcome the Reverend Dr. Holly Beaumont, who's a legislative advocate with the New Mexico Conference of Churches, and she's here to talk with us this morning. Welcome, Holly.
Good morning, Mary Charlotte. Good morning, Santa Fe.
It's great to have you here. Now, you also are a longtime public radio listener.
Indeed. Absolutely. You know, we're watching the collapse of local radio stations across the country, and we're so fortunate in Santa Fe to have KSFR. It's a source of news and culture, and it's a treasure in this community.
428-1393 is the number. The reason we come to you twice a year, and no more than that, but also no less, is because this is listener-supported radio, and you are a listener, you listener out there. And if you're calling, we're asking you to call 428-1393 and make a contribution. Many people also pledge online, and that's fine. You can go to ksfr.org and make a contribution there, and your contribution is safe and secure. But if you call this hour, and if you call right away, you can get a copy. We've got a limited number of these of Chris Hedges' new book, American Fascists, which is published by the Free Press, and they've been kind enough to donate a number of those copies of that book to us. So we're going to go into Chris Hedges in a moment, but I just want you to really take a moment and think about the value of KSFR programs in your own life. If you listen to this program, if you listen to the BBC, if you listen to some of the weekend programs, which have a smaller but very loyal following, if you listen to some of the late night programs, whatever you listen to, think about what the value is. It's hard to put a dollar amount on the value of news and entertainment. Nevertheless, if you think, well, that's worth three movies at least for 6 months, then go ahead and pledge the price of three movies, 428-1393. It's hard to make those kinds of formulas of what something that's essentially spiritual means in terms of dollar value, isn't it?
Absolutely.
But at the same time, we're asking you to do it. 428-1393 is the number. This is the day to call. We're getting toward the end of our fundraiser. We're in the home stretch. We're in the last 20% of our fundraiser. We've had a $100,000 goal. We are over 80,000, and so we just have to finish up and basically, I was going to say get out of here, but the point is not to get out of here. The point is to stay here. 428-1393 is how you do it. We're going to go now to hear Chris Hedges. I had a couple of days ago a very long interview with him. If you make it's actually an hour long. We're only going to hear part of that today because of the limitations of the length of this program. But if you make a contribution of $75, you can get a copy of the book. If you make a contribution of $35, you can get a copy of the unabridged hour-long CD, in which he goes into a lot of interesting things. And the deluxe packaged set is available for $100. 428-1393, that's the book and the CD of the full interview. Let's hear now Chris Hedges. I'd like to introduce Chris Hedges, author of the book American Fascists, The Christian Right and the War on America, published by the Free Press. Welcome to KSFR.
Thank you.
First of all, let's start with the basics. What is fascism? I mean, it's a term that a lot of people use without really thinking or knowing what it means.
Well, and it wasn't a term that I used lightly. And I began the book by quoting a short piece written by Umberto Eco in his book of essays called Five Moral Pieces, in which he lists what he thinks are the main components that make up a fascist ideology, what he calls ur-fascism or eternal fascism, and that would include, you know, the war against modernity, the cult of masculinity, that obsession with violence, the complete delegitimization of those who stand outside your group. And I think that when we look closely at what it is the radical Christian right in this country preaches, it has within it the seeds of a religious fascism.
Now, describe the elements of the religious right that you call, or that is called, dominionists.
Yes, that's a very important distinction, because traditional fundamentalists always called on believers to remove themselves from the contaminants of secular society, to shun political involvement, and traditional evangelicals, people like Billy Graham, always warned their followers about getting too close to political power. He himself came to the defense of Richard Nixon during the Watergate scandal and deeply regretted it. What we see now is a radical and very frightening mutation. It is a movement that has fused Christian iconography and Christian language with the iconography and language of American nationalism. That is a toxic and dangerous mix. It is also new and different. Although we use terms like evangelical and fundamentalist to describe these people, they are, as you pointed out, more properly called dominionists or Christian reconstructionists, those who believe that they can create the Christian state, who have as their goal the attainment of secular power. That is something we have never seen before with all of the religious revivals that have taken place within the country. And I think it's important to realize that within the last two or three decades, this movement, as embodied by people like Pat Robertson or James Dobson or others, have moved from the fringes of American society into the very corridors of power, both within the legislative, executive, and judicial branches of government. We have 45 senators and 186 members of the House of Representatives who receive between an 80 to 100% approval rating from the three most influential Christian right advocacy groups in Washington, including Eagle Forum and Family Resource Council. We've also seen this administration hand over hundreds of millions, some estimates run as high as $2 billion taxpayer dollars to groups like Pat Robertson's Operation Blessing that not only practice discrimination based on belief and sexual orientation, but also are using government funds to proselytize and promote their ideology. And that was, I think, unthinkable, even a couple decades ago.
What is their vision for the country and for the world?
Well, it is totalitarian at its core. I mean, this is a movement that promotes a binary view of the world, a black and white, good and evil, infidel and blessed. And there's nothing in between. There's no ambiguity. There is no legitimate way to be other than their way of being. They believe, in something that is always quite frightening, that not only do they know the will of God, but they have been anointed to carry out the will of God. And they would like to create a state where essentially that we would replicate the kind of despotic little fiefdoms that they have built within their own empires or their mega churches. And that is a male figure, almost always white, who claims to be in direct communication with God, as people like Pat Robertson claims to be, who can tell us what is right and wrong in the eyes of God, and essentially shunts aside those who do not embrace this belief system, denounce them as worthy only of conversion or eradication. They would like to turn over social service agencies as well as education to their institutions, which will use them as a form of indoctrination. They would like to have widespread use of the death penalty. One of the sort of foundational documents for dominionism is a book called The Institutes of Biblical Law by J. Roussas Rushduni. He lists 18 what he calls moral crimes, all of which would immediately result in the death penalty, including blasphemy and apostasy and witchcraft, adultery, along with murder and, more traditional crimes. So the vision that they have of a state, and it is a vision that is attainable for those who want to go read people like Rush Dooney or Gary North, is deeply frightening and deeply anti-democratic.
We tend to associate the word fascism with Adolf Hitler, and are there parallels to Hitler's Germany with today's religious right?
There are, but I think we always have to be careful about, you know, drawing too facile an analogy of fascism. You know, when you look at those who've tried to dissect what fascism is, there was a very fine book by a scholar at Columbia, Robert Paxton, called The Anatomy of Fascism. There are vast differences even between Mussolini's fascist state and Hitler's fascist state. Fascism is not going to return to us with swastikas and brown shirts. The ideological inheritors of fascism in this nation have found a way to propel their movement forward by wrapping themselves in the American flag and clutching the Christian cross. Indeed, there's a passage in the end of Paxton's book where he talks about precisely that, you know, it's fascism will come with stars and bars and mass recitations of the Pledge of Allegiance. And I think that for those who look at what are authentically fascist movements, we don't want to get too hung up in the outward manifestations or outward symbols of those movements, but look more profoundly at what it is they promote. There are parallels, first of all, I mean, one of the most interesting is that, of course, the first thing Hitler did when he took power in January of 1933 was launch an assault against homosexuals, banning all homosexual meeting places, and culminating in May with the book burning at the Berlin Institute for Sexual Science. That persecution of homosexuals was not only generally accepted and even lauded by the German public, but embraced by the German churches. And Claudia Kunz wrote a great book called The Nazi Conscience, in which she argues that the raw and most virulent anti-Semitism of the Nazis was pretty unpalatable to most Germans, and so that they built their movement on sort of an appeal to traditional values, returning Germany's moral core, and that by sort of stripping homosexuals of their rights, it became a way to legitimate tactics that would then be turned on people who were also defined as social deviants. And I think we do see a parallel in the assaults against the rights of gays and lesbians by this movement, and I think for the same reason. We certainly see the way that these movements mask themselves in the comforting language of Christianity and patriotism, and I think that in that way hide how radical they are. The alliance between the Christian right and the corporate interests that are rapidly creating the corporate state and fueling the American oligarchy, again, is something that one sees with fascist movements. Paxton argues, I think correctly, that no fascist movement is independent or pure, that fascist movements, unlike communist movements, build alliances with traditional conservatives within a society and with industrialists and corporate interests, often an uneasy relationship. And we certainly have seen that those alliances. We see it even within the Bush administration with people who come out of, the sort of neocon, Leo Straussian wing, Cheney, Pearl, coupled with, the evangelical foot soldiers.
You're listening to KSFR, and we're talking to Chris Hedges. The book is called American Fascists, The Christian Right and the War on America. If you want a copy of the book, and if you want to make a contribution to KSFR, or want a CD of this interview, which is about twice as long as we're going to be able to play today, call 428-1393, 428-1393. I'm here with the Reverend Holly Beaumont, who is a legislative advocate. She's with New Mexico Council of Churches, and is also a reader of Chris Hedges.
I am a reader of Chris Hedges. I'm a fan. I was at the Lenzic about a year ago when Chris was there being interviewed by Amy Goodman, and he talked at that time about this book and that it was going to be coming out at the end of the year or the first of the next year. So I'd been waiting for it, and I have it, and when now that the legislative session is over, I may have some time to sit down and read it.
And you've got a sort of synopsis of it so far, at least the first segment of this interview.
Absolutely.
Holly Beaumont, you are a listener to public radio, and you're also really an advocate and an activist. What kind of work do you do, and how does public radio help you and interact with the kind of work you do?
Well, I'll be very specific about KSFR. When we were setting up, I was talking about how much I appreciated your interviews with Linda Siegel during the legislative session 3 times a week, and I would tune in, even though I was over there at the Roundhouse. I found it very helpful to hear Linda sort of summarize what was going on and update us on legislative action.
And she's going to be here on Friday, actually.
Is she really?
Giving a wrap-up.
Friday is the last day for the governor to sign bills, and after that they fall into that limbo of pocket vetoes.
Right.
We're all kind of holding our breath to see what slips through his fingers and what he actually signs.
And so you listen to the legislative update with Linda Siegel. Do you listen to other KSFR programs as well?
Well, I listen to you, Mary Charlotte. It's a great way to start the day, and you have fascinating interviews. And, you know, you've been wonderful in helping us here with the Jewish and Christian Dialogue and other events, helping us to promote those, most recently last fall with Thomas Cahill. And, in fact, your interview with Tom was excellent. And he had so much fun with you. He gets interviewed all across the country by local radio personalities, and sometimes they can be pretty flat. But with you, it was very exciting, and he really enjoyed it.
Well, flatness is not what we want here at KSFR. We want roundness and all sorts of platonic solid shapes. 428-1393 is the number if you want to make a contribution. We're going to hear a commentary from Ron Bloomberg right now. We're going to also hear from some of our beloved underwriters, who is the other major group of people that keep us in business, so to speak, who keep us on the air. But most of all, we need you. 428-1393. Please give a call right now.
It's Ron Bloomberg, just a voice in the crowd. Here's my dilemma. It's pledge week at the station. Now, I can understand why you would call in a pledge. Look at all the goodies you get. Radio Cafe, Journey Home, Bob Edwards, Jazz Blues, one of the great news teams anywhere, Camp Love Wave, The Food Show. So you should be contributing. But what if you were me? I have to write a commentary every week. Get in my car, drive down to the station, record it. Know how much I get paid? Zippo. In fact, it costs me money. Do they ever offer me a piece of carrot cake, a chili burger? No, never had a dinner. So don't you think that's a big enough contribution for me? After all, I'm a writer. That's what I do for a living. I have responsibilities, expenses, a sink that keeps backing up. I should be having my own pledge drive. But you know, I'm going to take the high road here. Know why? Because we're an independent station. We're the underdog. We say what needs to be said. We're the little guy fighting the big conglomerates. I'm not saying I'm the little guy. I'm 6 feet tall. But KSFR needs our support. Even those of us who never even get a piece of carrot cake. I'm going to make my pledge, and so should you. Because Santa Fe needs us. The country needs us. The world needs us. And damn it, the Dixie Chicks need us. Talk to you next week, if you have a minute.
All right, Santa Fe's own Ron Bloomberg can be heard each Tuesday on the Radio Cafe, Thursdays after the news at noon, and Saturday mornings just before the top of the 10 o'clock hour after Bob Edwards.
KSFR programming is underwritten in part by Garcia Street Books, also a supporter of the Santa Fe Poet Laureate program. Here's a poem by Laureate Arthur Z.
The owl. The path was purple in the dusk. I saw an owl perched on a branch. And when the owl stirred, a fine dust fell from its wings. I was silent then, and felt the owl quaver. And at dawn, waking, the path was green in the May light.
KSFR programming is underwritten by Locals Care. Locals Care Community Cards reward you for shopping and dining at over 100 locally owned businesses. You can support a Santa Fe nonprofit and earn rewards for yourself at any Locals Care business. Find program information and a current list of participating businesses and nonprofits at locals-care.com. Offered in cooperation with the Santa Fe Alliance and sponsored by Century Bank, Los Alamos National Bank, the New Mexican, and the City of Santa Fe.
Classical Music is back on KSFR. Sundays, we feature Santa Fe's finest classical performers, the Desert Chorale, the Symphony, Pro Musica, and more. Santa Fe Public Radio will reprise a performance by one of our fine local groups Sundays at 2 p.m., alternating weeks with Lennon's acclaimed readings and conversations. Please join us for 90 minutes of great classical music right here. We call it Classical Sunday from Santa Fe.
The time is 8:30, just about 8:30 here on KSFR. We're going to return to our interview with Chris Hedges, but right now, please call 428-1393. Please make your pledge, and you'll be glad you did. You say that these Dominionists make up about 12% of the population. Why does it seem like more?
It's actually less, I think. I think I quoted a poll by Peter Green, who tried to determine, you know, in terms of hardcore Dominionists, people who actually understood this vision and wanted to see it implanted, was less than 7%. But of course, what they can appeal, or what they can count on, is their appeal to 80 to 100 million people who define themselves as evangelical Christians. And I think many of these people, you know, if a state like this was imposed upon them, would have no desire to live in it. But of course, they're very clever about using that traditional images and traditional concepts to mask what it is they're in fact setting up. So the movement itself is small, and I think that's always true with radical movements. I mean, Crane Britton's great work, The Anatomy of a Revolution, talks about the sort of generic qualities of revolutionary movements. And he notes precisely that, you know, in revolutionary Russia, the Bolsheviks constituted less than 1% of the Russian population. But they're ruthless. They certainly turn on their allies once they achieve power, and they count on the sympathy and probably passivity and complacency of the majority.
Tell us about the phenomenon of the megachurch.
Well, the megachurch is, I think, a response to the destruction of community, which unfortunately has just ravaged the United States. My family comes from a former mill town in Maine. And this is just not an uncommon experience to former manufacturing centers. The mill, of course, left. Comparable jobs never came in to replace it. People are working now, 20, 30 years later, at jobs that pay salaries two-thirds or less from what they once got, you know, working at a steel plant. They don't have benefits. They don't have job security. And that has been coupled with a slashing of state and federal assistance, so that when you go into these former towns, not only in Maine, but in, you know, former manufacturing centers like Ohio, the infrastructure is literally falling apart. The schools are crumbling, the downtowns are boarded up, the streets are potholed, and that physical destruction of community, which is a manifestation of the disenfranchisement of the American working class, brings with it a host of social ills, from domestic violence to broken homes to alcoholism, and that has pushed people into the arms of these demagogues who promise a world of magic and miracles and angels and the fact that Jesus will walk with them. And I think that phenomena is something that is sweeping across the United States with the rise of the American oligarchy. The fact that the top 1% in this nation has amassed more wealth than the bottom 90% combined. There's actually an article about this in today's New York Times. And this vast disparity and inequity is something that has political ramifications. It gives rise to mutant political movements. And that's not a new idea. That's something that the philosophers who studied Greek democracy, like Plutarch or Thucydides, understood, that you can't maintain a democracy when you carry out this kind of an assault on your working and your middle class. And, of course, now anything that can be put on software can be outsourced, is being outsourced to India and other places. So the megachurches have risen in response to this destruction of community, in many ways have replaced community. They certainly occupy not only the spiritual time, but the recreational and often educational time of their members. The problem is that they're authoritarian entities. The men, they're almost universally men, almost universally white men, are people who claim to speak for God, who know what is right and wrong in the eyes of God. There is no questioning. They will tell people what constitutes moral behavior and how to behave. But I think more importantly, those people who do not submit to their authority have no place within those communities. So this movement often speaks about family. But in fact, it's the great destroyer of family. And I would stand in these megachurches and listen to these heartbreaking emotional calls on the part of members for those around them to pray for unsaved family members, because of course they weren't admitted into that community if they didn't submit to the authorities of that community. And yet those within the community, their time was so completely occupied that they severed their ties with their old community. And that's the role of the megachurches. It is to recreate community, but not a democratic community, an authoritarian community. And this gets into the whole power structure that they promote. You know, they speak, figures like James Dobson, about giving power back to the male and having women be subservient and children obedient. Well, this is a power structure that, of course, they claim is ordained by God, and that is replicated within these megachurches, and they want to see this power structure replicated within the community and the nation at large. But it is a power structure that bears far more in common with fascist power structures than it does with Christian or democratic power structures.
There's a real irony in what you're saying, because these religions draw on the poor classes, people whose lives have really been screwed up in one way or another, to fill their ranks, and yet they totally reject any economic or political analysis of the reasons for that very poverty.
Yes, that you're right, and that is what's so sad. You know, these are people who have been betrayed by us, you know, but I think we should be clear that they have been betrayed by both parties, the Democratic and the Republican Party, that it was a Democratic administration under President Clinton that brought us NAFTA, that deregulated the FCC, allowing these sort of media monopolies, corporate monopolies, that threw a million people off the welfare rolls. And the problem is that when the Democratic Party in the 1980s realized that corporate interests or the corporate state was as willing to fund them as the Republicans, they took the money and ran. The consequences of that for American workers has been devastating. And the abandonment of the American working class and current assault on the middle class has seen people fall into real states of despair or desperation. And I think it's interesting that the great philosophers on totalitarianism, from Hannah Arendt to Karl Popper, cite this despair as essentially the engine of totalitarian movements. Because when you fall into that kind of despair, then you become ripe for manipulation by demagogues who promise this world of magic, who promise a kind of utopian paradise, whether it's fraternité, égalité, liberté, a worker's paradise, or the second coming of Jesus Christ. And I think that is precisely what's besetting the country. I think a lot of critics of the Christian right naively thought that the 2006 elections marked a kind of watershed in which the movement was declining in importance. I would argue that until those disparities are met, until we begin to recreate community for people who've lost community, until we re-enfranchise tens of millions of people in this country who've been pushed aside back into our society, there will be no way to blunt this movement.
There's an interesting quote that in your book from Dr. James Luther Adams talking about the four freedoms, freedom of speech and religion and freedom from want and fear. And I think we often think about the freedom of speech and religion and so on, but freedom from fear, I mean, freedom from want, those are the exact lacks of freedom that the constituencies of these churches have and that really draws them into the church. They're scared. They don't have enough.
Well, it's a fear-based movement, and you know, there was a very fine documentary called Jesus Camp that I think it's the only documentary that I've seen that captured what can only properly be described as child abuse. It is about terrifying followers into the embrace of this system, and sitting through hours of listening to these preachers spew out this stuff. It had a frightening kind of schizophrenic quality to it where, in one moment they were talking about a loving God, a loving Jesus, and then on the other about, being cast into outer darkness and suffering the torments of hell. And they would do this, often within, as they were speaking, within a minute or two. I mean, and you would swing back and forth from these two emotions, and it had the effect of sort of knocking you off balance. It is a fear-based movement. It is a movement that, asks that question as to whether you're right with Jesus. And if you're not, and if your family members are not, what awaits them at the end times is a horrific, horrible and brutal extermination. And that, of course, is brought to us with this obsession with, pornographic obsession with these depictions, fantastic and completely non-biblical depictions of what will happen when the rapture comes. I mean, the rapture, by the way, the word rapture never appears in the Bible, and the whole eschatology of the rapture is a creation of Darby and other proponents. It's not a biblical, it's not biblically based, but it's effective. I think, like all despotic movements, they keep their followers in check through fear.
You're listening to KSFR Santa Fe, the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We are talking to Chris Hedges, and the Reverend Dr. Holly Beaumont is with us. 4281393 is the number. Ladies and gentlemen, the phones have been a little bit slow this morning during this show. I do not like it.
We do have a few people to thank, however, Mary Charlotte.
Oh, good.
Melinda Silver
called. Thank you, Melinda.
Daniel Burke called as well and
thank
made
you,
a pledge.
Dan.
Jean Youngblood
thank
made
you,
a
Jean.
Pledge. And then, once again, Anonymous called in.
Ah, Anonymous, yes, that famous artist from the history of prehistoric art.
Hey, Mary Charlotte, Dal here.
Yes, Dal Dierman, General Manager of KSFR.
Thank you.
What's happening?
Two things. One, I really do want to impress at everybody what an important book this is by Chris Hedges and what a great value it is if they call now and ask for the book or ask for the book and the CD. It's $75 for the book, $35 for the CD, or $100 for both. The other thing I want to do is we've got 18 minutes left till 9 o'clock, and we have a short challenge, $500 between now and 9, courtesy of the other independent radio station in Santa Fe, which is very enthusiastic about its survival and our survival. And, in fact, Honey Harris is talking on the air at KBAC right now about our fund drive.
Oh, that's terrific.
So we have a $500 challenge from those guys.
That's amazing. Now, this is a real example of cooperation rather than competition between two stations that are both much beloved by our listeners here in Santa Fe. $500 means five calls from people who take both the book and the CD, or 10 contributions of $50, or if I could do the math, I could tell you how many contributions of $35. But, ladies and gentlemen, just call 428-1393. Holly Beaumont, you've been listening to this interview. What strikes you? What does it make you think about?
Well, it makes me think about how important this radio station is because, as a person who works for the church, so to speak, but the progressive church, I hear from people all the time, why are you so silent? you know, all we hear is the shrill voice of the religious right. And I tell them that we're not silent. We are actually very vocal and very active. Unfortunately, we need to find media that's willing to give us access to the community to be heard, and KSFR plays a critical role in allowing us to be heard in the community to counter this voice that's covered by corporate media. So if you are interested in protecting our democracy, then you need to be writing those checks to KSFR now.
428-1393 is the number, and that's how you do it. We're going to go back to Chris Hedges in just a moment, but I would just like to really remind people that if you are listening right now, and especially if you are enjoying this interview, and if you haven't contributed yet, this is it, ladies and gentlemen. I mean, we are within less than $20,000 of the end of our fund drive. It sounds like a lot of money. It is a lot of money. The only way we're going to get there is those people who've been holding out, who are saying, well, I'm not really sure yet, or maybe I'll do it toward the end, or I want to be the last person who calls. Well, it's impossible for all of you to be the last person who calls. So why don't you be the, let's see, penultimate or something like that, or in the last 20 or 30 who call?
How about the next person who calls?
Why don't you be the next person who calls? And I just love that Radio Free Santa Fe is making a challenge to us. So let's meet that challenge. 428-1393, $500 by the hour of 9 o'clock. Let's go back now to Chris Hedges, 428-1393, call. It's interesting because there's a lot of end time movements going on right now. I mean, here in Santa Fe, a lot of people believe that there's great significance to the end of the Mayan calendar, which is about 5 years from now. And everyone seems to be using words like time is running out. And on the right, they're talking about moral turpitude. On the left, they're talking about global warming and pollution. I mean, is there a relationship between these different strains of end time thinking?
Well, time is running out. I mean, that's real. You know, if we don't make a radical change in the way we live, we are going to commit collective suicide. I mean, I think that's what global warming is, and that's not wrong. Unfortunately, there are two ways to deal with that. One is to alter our lifestyle and begin to live in such a way that we protect the environment around us. The other is to welcome catastrophes and to believe that they are signs on the road to Armageddon. And I think part of the perniciousness of this movement is that it promotes a theology of despair, a theology which says nothing in this world is worth saving, including non-believers, and that the most glorious moment in human history will come at the end of human history when the earth and all those who do not submit to our ideology are destroyed, and we, in this kind of weird spiritual Darwinism, are lifted naked up into heaven. And that is, you know, that's what happens when you embrace a non-reality-based belief system, which these people have. They have out of desperation. So that I think to the extent that we as a society continue to refuse to confront the looming catastrophe in front of us, and the worse things get, then, of course, it will empower a certain segment of the society that prefers to leave the discomforting reality-based world to embrace this non-reality-based world of magic and a promised utopia. So I see, you know, I see as things deteriorate a kind of this being a kind of feeder into a movement that really propels us closer and closer to collective suicide. Now, you know, raising the point about the obsession with the Mayan calendar is interesting because I think that, you know, I speak as a Presbyterian seminarian, I finished seminary, that, you know, the New Age movement does bear some characteristics that are similar to the Christian right, and that they also embrace a world of magic. There is a kind of, within the New Age movement, a non-reality-based belief system. Now, they're not organized in the way the Christian right is. They're not seeking political power. But I think it's fascinating that totalitarian movements, such as, for instance, the Nazis, were obsessed with the occult. That in some ways, although I think that the New Age movement is politically benign, There are similarities, that again, it is a way of retreating from a reality-based world, and unfortunately, the worse the world gets, the more that temptation to retreat becomes enticing and attractive.
I have to say, a lot of people who embrace New Age ideas will say everything happens for a reason, and after 9/11, nobody said that for a couple of months. It was quite refreshing.
Well, I lived through the siege of Sarajevo, so I have very little patience for people who believe that stars or God or anyone else is out there, you know, protecting them and wrapping sort of a cocoon of safety around them and watching out for them. I mean, 4,000 children were killed in Sarajevo during the siege. You know, I just spent too much time in war zones to recognize that we live in a morally neutral universe. But I think that that tendency to ascribe to stars or to Jesus or anyone else, you know, a kind of power that watches out for me is really at its core a form of narcissism.
Well, I wanted to ask you, how did the research and writing of this book compare to your experiences as a war correspondent?
Oh, it wasn't as emotionally traumatic. Certainly wasn't physically dangerous at all. I think that what was interesting in this book is there was a kind of convergence, you know, as someone who comes out of a church tradition and somebody who went to seminary, but also somebody who had lived in disintegrating states like the former Yugoslavia. I understand how despotic or totalitarian movements work. I mean, and not in a theoretical way, but in a real way. I watch the Christian right, and there are many similarities I find to Slobodan Milosevic's Serbian nationalist movement. I think I'm keenly aware, because of those two strains of my background, the engine or as well as the tactics that are embraced by this movement, because I've seen similar movements work, and because I'm biblically literate, I'm very attuned to how they distort and misrepresent the Bible, and frankly make up whole portions of the Bible, to promote an ideology that is really an anathema to the Christian Gospels. I mean, the notion that Jesus came to make us wealthy is ridiculous for anyone who reads the four Gospels. The notion is, as this movement claims, that Jesus was a warrior, you know, or as Jerry Falwell says, a man with muscles, or when they do have depictions of Jesus, he's carrying a sword, is absurd. I mean, I'm not a pacifist, but Jesus clearly was a pacifist. Jesus' obsession was with the poor. There are, of course, hateful and bigoted, morally indefensible passages in the Bible, both in the Christian Bible and the Hebrew Bible. The Gospel of John has repugnant passages of anti-Semitism. Paul defends the institution of slavery, turns against homosexuals. There are whole parts of the Hebrew Bible where God appears to bless genocide and vengeance. But what's disturbing for those of us who find the Bible to be a foundational and an important ethical and moral document, which I think it is that they pick out the most hateful passages within it and ignore the rest. And I think that's a window into what it is they want and what it is they're promoting. I mean, there was a great line by Reinhold Niebuhr. You know, he said religion is a good thing for good people and a bad thing for bad people, and these are bad people.
Well, there's another particular irony, which is that even as the Christian right is very much anti-Darwin, anti-science, and so on, they're really embracing a kind of social and spiritual Darwinism in the form of free market capitalism and, you know, putting themselves at the top of the food chain.
Yeah, very much so. You know, that whole issue of creationism is actually really important. It is really not about presenting an alternative. It is about an assault on dispassionate, honest, intellectual, and scientific inquiry. It is about essentially making facts interchangeable with opinions, making lies true. Once you elevate creationism, which no scientist embraces or accepts as a viable form of the origins of our Earth, you you have said to people that you can believe whatever you want to believe. And that is, of course, exactly what totalitarian movements do. You know, facts are discarded when they become inconvenient. And they have removed, you know, 54 million Americans, now according to polling, believe in that the Earth was created in 6 days, according to Genesis. Well, you've removed these people from a world where, from a rational world. And, you know, that is, they've shut the masses off, or their masses off, and thrust them into a very grim, imaginary universe. And, of course, once they achieve power, they will thrust the rest of us by force into the same universe. Creationism is not a benign force. It's a very, very pernicious force. And the fact is, the fact that it's being taught in public schools, you know, that there is a bill in the Texas legislature now to ban all discussion or mention of evolution in Texas school textbooks, gives us a step, or shows us, you know, as this movement progresses, you know, how dangerous they are, and the kind of world that they will force the rest of us to live in.
And that is as much as we have time for, ladies and gentlemen. Chris Hedges is the author of the book American Fascists, The Christian Right and the War on America. That book can be yours. It already does belong to some people who very kindly called already. The number is 428-1393. And we will have a report from the control room in just a moment to let us know how we're doing. We've had a $500 challenge. We hope that we are meeting that. Reverend Dr. Holly Beaumont, that's a bunch of titles that you have, and you are, I guess you've been in the church, what, all your life?
I actually have been in the church all my life. I was a member of a family that got dragged to church on a regular basis, every Sunday, and the decision to go to seminary came out of the civil rights movement and the peace movement, and that was really what attracted me to the progressive church. And, you know, Chris Hedges could have easily written a book, The Christian Right and the War on the Christian Left. And I want to say that I'm going to accept that challenge to be one of those people who writes a check for KSFR. And I want to encourage everybody out there who is concerned about providing, again, a place where the religious left can be heard to support KSFR and to join me in writing a check for what amount you can afford, and help us to keep this radio station healthy and in our community.
428-1393 is the way we do that. Report from the control room.
And well, we're doing pretty darn well in the last few minutes. A combination of things, I guess. One of them being that we have a $500 challenge from our friends at the other independent station in town, KBAC. We have until 9 o'clock, and we are getting there, but we're not there yet. We really need some phone calls in the next 3 minutes.
The next 3 minutes, ladies and gentlemen, 3 minutes and 5 seconds, 4 seconds. 428-1393 is the number, and do we have anybody to thank?
Yes, we do. Earl James.
Thank you, Earl.
Thank you so much for the radio cafe and the journey home, Earl says. Ralph Nevis.
Thank you, Ralph.
Loves your show, Jazz, Journey Home. Diane Benson.
Thank you, Diane.
And Pat Myers.
Thanks to all of you. Thank you so much for calling. And those of you who haven't called, now I know that for some people who've never called public radio before, it's kind of a stretch. They think, oh, well, that's not me. That's those kinds of people who listen to public radio. Or, well, I don't agree with everything Chris Hedges said. I kind of believe in magic myself, you know. Guess what? This is all about the marketplace of ideas, and you get it all on KSFR. And I actually was trying to get this guy who wrote a book on the Mayan calendar to be on the pledge drive this year, and it didn't work out, but we may still have him on in the future. It's all about ideas as building blocks for our lives, ideas as nourishment for our minds and souls. It really is. That's what it's about. It's not just necessarily light entertainment or getting through the day with some noise in your car. It's actually about creating community and thinking together. And, you know, this is, for me, I find that a lot of the work that comes up here is fodder for conversations, and I hope that it helps other people, that basically it sort of helps other people have material to bring to their conversations. If you feel like this, if you have any feelings about public radio, if any of those feelings are positive, please just contribute. You know, just even if it's $10, even if it's $5, call 428-1393.
We've got just a minute left to make that challenge, and we need about $75, last I knew. So please call us now, 428-1393.
And I want to thank you so much, Holly Beaumont, for being with us. Reverend Dr. Holly Beaumont is with the New Mexico Conference of Churches.
I just want to say that the free exchange of information is absolutely essential to democracy. And so, again, this radio station is such a treasure in this community and such an asset, and we must support it.
And, you know, you don't know what you got till it's gone. Don't take the risk that KSFR will ever be gone. Make a contribution now. You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We are on the web at ksfr.org, where you can also make a secure pledge. You can reach me at radiocafe@ksfr.org or leave a message at 428-1528. We want to thank Laurel Reynolds for engineering today and thank Dal Dearman for coming on the radio with us. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team. And BBC also doesn't come for free, which is why we're also asking you for contributions. And after that, the Jazz Hoedown. We're broadcasting live from the Santa Fe Baking Company. Tomorrow is Animal Day, and we're going to be talking about animals and all sorts of good things. That's Dal Dearman's favorite day.
Yaha!
And that and much, much more is here on Santa Fe's only public radio station, KSFR. So once again, I'm going to give that number. It may now be so deeply etched on the inside of your skull that you don't even need to hear it, but it is 428-1393. And call now. I'm going to guarantee you'll be happy you did. Hasta la vista. Ciao.